We'll just, I can't find any markers on the farm, but I'm going to have a pretty soon. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, I guess I can call this order and do that. And represent Marnus has checked in, and represent Detmer, so we've got some bipartisan check here. So, welcome, Commissioner, to the committee, and go ahead with your budget and your change items, and then we'll get into questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. For the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. For the balance of the hearing, I'll refer to the agency by its acronym, as DEED. We're going to use the small PowerPoint deck that we provided copies of, and it will also appear on the screen, and then refer you frequently to the budget book. And the page numbers for the budget books are cross-referenced on the PowerPoint slide. I'm going to start...
Members, if you have any questions, you can ask them right away.
Happy to take questions whenever you're ready, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
All right. The plan is that I'm going to go through the first few general overview slides, and then each of the division directors will come up and explain the budgets for their division, starting with Mark Loftus. I'll do the Unemployment Insurance Division administrative budget and the General Support Services budget at the end. But if I can refer you to... we started formulating this budget with the agency's mission and goals. As I have told you before, this is a relatively new agency. It came together about 5 years ago. The mission is short and simple to talk about, but complex to execute. We exist to assist individuals, businesses, and communities achieve prosperity through growth. We accomplished that through six key agency goals, and we tried to keep these key agency goals in mind as we made budget recommendations for the governor. But we are charged with assisting individuals, businesses, and communities to create and retain jobs. Virtually everything that DEED does is done with partners. In the case of this goal, our partners are often city and county economic development directors and their agencies, port authorities, regional economic development corporations, the initiative foundations, and a variety of others. We work to cultivate entrepreneurs through a variety of partnerships in regional efforts, such as the Northeast Entrepreneurs Fund and the Six McKnight Initiative Fund, and then through 9 small business development centers that we operate as a partnership with educational institutions, the U.S. Department of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and various local members. We also are involved in a variety of efforts in enhancing community vitality. It often comes in programs that assist in cleaning up contaminated or polluted sites, in helping to redevelop previously used industrial or commercial properties through the redevelopment fund, in cleaning up pollution contamination through the Petro Fund, and in assisting small cities through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development Small Cities Development Program. We're heavily involved in with partners, again, in strengthening the workforce. Our principal partners are the 16 workforce service agencies. Some of them still refer to themselves as PICs, or private industry councils, which their official name is Workforce Service Areas, and they operate 47 workforce centers, and we work in partnership with them in a program such as the Workforce Investment Act for youth and adults, the Extended Employment Program, the Vocational Rehabilitation Program, and others. Fostering self-sufficiency is principally a program where we're dealing with individuals who may have barriers to work. I mentioned vocational rehabilitation, state services for the blind, and programs for disabled or injured veterans. And we also operate the Disability Determination Unit for the Department of Social Security for Minnesota applicants. And finally, one of our final goals is addressing economic change. We do this through a variety of planning and assistance efforts, like our first grants framework for integrated regional strategy, our work with the Initiative Foundations and with other leadership organizations to assist in making good decisions about Minnesota's economic future. The money that we get to do that comes from a wide variety of sources, and it's shown on this funding source slide. This is in thousands of dollars. It adds up to just over $700 million. 68% comes from a wide variety of federal funds. In your book, there is a detailed exhibit of where the federal funds come from. I have to apologize, Mr. Chairman. You and Dr. Fine had asked for a single-page spreadsheet, and we had a failure to communicate. We expect to have that for you on Friday. That shows the sources and uses of funds in as much detail as we can provide. But the big picture is that 68% of our money comes from a variety of federal programs, 6% from the Special Revenue Fund, about 13% from the Workforce Development Fund, which is a surcharge on unemployment insurance rates for Minnesota employers, about 2% from the Petroleum Tank Cleanup Fund, which is part of the gas tax, and 11% from the general fund. $77.6 million is the governor's recommendation for the coming biennium.
Commissioner, give me a little more in-depth, maybe for the committee, too, about the $40 million from the Special Revenue Fund. What special revenues, what we're talking about.
I'm going to ask Cindy Farrell, our Chief Financial Officer, to come down and help me with that. They come from a variety of sources. Some examples are $1.2 million from penalty and interest on unemployment insurance late collections if employers are late in paying their taxes and they pay penalty and interest. There is money from the...
is that annually or an annual?
That's for the biennium. It's $600,000 a year. Now, that's what we get appropriated to DEED, and it goes to unemployment insurance. There are more penalties and interest than that, but the balance goes to the general fund. Another example of special revenues are the allocation for general support to federally funded programs. That share of federal funds comes in as special revenue. Cindy, can you, for the record, Cindy Farrell, Chief Financial Officer at DEED.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In addition to those things that Commissioner McElroy identified, there's about $2 million for the biennium that the agency generates in conference and seminar registration fees for various educational events that we put on, about $2 million for the Urban Challenge Grant Program, $4 million from the...
That's the repayments of the revolving loan fund. Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
About $4 million from the Minnesota Investment Fund. There's about $2.5 million in revenue collected by state services for the blind and fees it collects for administering the business enterprise program as well as the communication center. And about $2.3 million is revenue from to fund the displaced homemaker program. And it's a fee that's allocated as part of the marriage license fee.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, so displaced homemakers get money when you get married, and they get money when you get divorced.
Yeah. And the divorce is bringing in more money than the marriage? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think it's $2 on a marriage and $4 on a divorce.
The opposite to make people think whether they should get married or not. But anyway, Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll get married and then divorced and help contribute to the... because I haven't done either. Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, can you give me just a 30-second on the petroleum tank cleanup as a newbie here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is a tax levied on as part of the gas tax called it's blink on and blink off. It is on as the Commissioner of Revenue determines that it is needed. It is used to fund a contaminated site cleanup program where the contamination was related to oil, diesel fuel, air jet fuel, has to have a petroleum source. It was originally used to clean up and can still be used to clean up old underground leaking tanks. The problem is referred to as leaking underground steel tanks or leaking underground storage tanks. That is still a permitted use, but it's also often now used as a grant to local units of government to clean up other kinds of petroleum-related contamination.
Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I'm assuming since there's $12.5 million in that fund, the department's determined that you have some sort of need list around the state, or...
Mr. Chairman, it is an application-based grant program. done in two rounds each year, and it is always over subscribed. There are more needs than there are uses. We sometimes there is a match required, so that controls the use. And we give a preference for cleaning up sites for which there is an identified use. And so, yes, we have determined that there is a need for that amount of cleanup. In fact, some would argue there's a need for more than that, but the revenue source is the amount that it produces.
Commissioner, is there a breakdown for Epsom Reiner in that in the budget book here of the actual that particular program?
Yes, it is in
and the criteria when you apply. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe one of you or your staff, but most of that fund is over at Commerce, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, the cleaning up motor fuel stations is at Commerce.
Right. And so you get a little chunk to clean up other petroleum-type spills. And
yeah. And, Mr. Chairman, to be, and just from memory, my recollection is that a great many of our uses have been related to railroad spills along old railroad right-of-way or old railroad maintenance yards and a variety of others. We've had a shingle plant that had asphalt shingles, and so there was an asphalt spill. But it is non-motor fuel station contamination. But if you'd like more details, Cindy, if I could excuse you and have Mark Boffitt come down. Mark Boffitt.
Well, Representative Reiner, we don't need any more detail on that.
All right, we'll wait on that then.
Okay.
Let me go on.
Representative Bettman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just one quick question on the petroleum cleanup. Is this just for commercial, or could it be also for residential?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, I don't know. Let me find out for you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, it's limited to commercial sites.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Detmer, you may want, if you have a particular, you know, constituent that needs, as long as you talk to somebody at Commerce, because I think, I don't know if it applies to individuals, but I know the bulk of this money is over there. Okay, go ahead, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, this pie chart is a summary of expenditure by program. The unemployment insurance wedge of this pie is the administrative expense and not the benefit. We do not show unemployment insurance benefits as a part of our budget. They're paid out of the unemployment insurance trust fund, and they are, we certainly account for them, but only the administrative portion, about $95 million for the biennium, shows up as the budget amount. That's a grant from the Federal Department of Labor, and it comes out of the federal unemployment tax account paid for by Minnesota employers. Business and community development constitutes 14% of our budget, $102 million. The Workforce Development Fund is $503.9 million, by far our largest program. The 5% for general support is actually a rounding. It is 4.6%. And I'm proud of the fact that we hold total administrative costs to 4.6% in a fairly complex agency. The change items are relatively simple. Some of them, Mr. Chairman, we're showing all of the change items that are deed changes here. Some of them will not appear in your budget. They will appear in the tax committee's budget because they are tax items. That includes the angel and early stage capital, which are two tax credits intended to increase employment in Minnesota, a credit for individuals that would invest in early stage companies. This is a bill that's been carried by a number of members of the legislature over the years. It's not a brand new idea. In fact, the 2008 budget had a pilot program of this idea for the Border Cities program, and the Border Cities are allowed to use. The early stage capital is a larger program, $38 million total over 4 years, that is that will provide a credit to insurance companies for investing in small business investment companies that invest in Minnesota companies, with a requirement in the law that they be well distributed around the state, so it doesn't all come to the metro or all to greater Minnesota, and that have an emphasis on green technology and green jobs. The base budget reduction will provide some additional detail later in the presentation.
Commissioner, let's talk about these economic development incentives here in this change item. Governor Pelosi, think you can wait until 2012 to have some type of we might be in the midst of the Great Great Depression by then, or the grip of it. So,
Mr. Chairman,
why the delay?
The reason there's a delay is because the investments need to be made in 2009, and there is a three-year delay on the tax credit that goes to either individuals or insurance companies because there's a three-year holding period on the investment.
Why not have a grant program instead of a tax credit program, Matthew?
We're following, it's a good question, we're following successful programs in a wide variety of other states. And a grant program, you know, we get $1 of benefit for each dollar invested. In a tax credit program like this, we get $4 of benefit in the angel credit for each dollar invested. And about, it's a 60% credit to insurance companies and with a three-year holding period. So we believe we're leveraging the private market interest in these kinds of programs. The insurance company program, the Small Business Investment Company program, has been done in 11 states. A number of states have done it multiple times, which we believe indicates they've had success with the program. This bill was introduced, so this is not our idea originally. Originally it came from an industry group. Senator Bach was the author in the Senate. I don't recall who the author was in the House. Nobody's raising their hands to claim it, but I don't remember. I will find out who the House author was. So they have immediate effect, Mr. Chairman, but because there's tax credits, they don't have a cost for a couple of years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner McElroy. I think it was Brian Winkler, Representative Winkler, that's been chair in the House. But the question I have, why is it that we single out the insurance industry for this? Is it because they're sitting on, well, nowhere near as much money as they used to be, but is there a reason why we'd pick them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, there are two reasons. One, that it has been a successful model in other states, and two, that the insurance gross premium tax has a particular kind of leverage point to make it attractive, because if our insurance gross premium tax goes down, the retaliatory tax paid in other states goes down, so there's some additional leverage in that tax. There have been some states that have allowed this investment to mutual funds and other fund managers or to other entities. And we've had some concerns because insurance companies are, in my judgment, well regulated. I think it seemed to be less risky than to allow hedge funds or others to do this. But that's certainly a debate that could be had.
And then just a follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative. They weren't well regulated enough, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
some of them get some huge bailout money, but go ahead.
Is it just an arbitrary number? I think it was $100 million was the amount of the that was proposed in the, at least in Representative Winkler's bill. I thought Senator Bach goes, well, why not $1 billion? Why not $5 billion? Why not some other figure? What's the magic of $100 million?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, it is smaller now. I believe it's $63 million because of the amount of tax credits that were available. An effort, first of all, there's a finite amount of tax liability, and there's more than $38 million in tax liability. But you can't do billions and billions because you run out of tax against which to offer the credit. It also, we want to make absolutely sure it works, so we want to start with a reasonable number. And it is not free. To raise $63 million requires a $38 million investment in a tax credit, the taxes that would be otherwise paid. Mr. Chairman, your concern, one insurance company, AIG, which was heavily involved in investment in derivatives based on home mortgages, was impacted. The other insurance companies were more cautious, and we haven't seen the impact on the insurance companies that we've seen on either investment banks or commercial banks. I'm personally concerned about allowing the SBIC credit to mutual funds or hedge funds. But it's not an unreasonable discussion. It's something that and it would make it easier to sell the credits. I'm rather sure the insurance companies will pick up this level of credit. All right. The next item on this exhibit is our base budget reduction, $8.98 million from the general fund and $3.3 million from the Workforce Development Fund. There's detail of those on page 11 of your budget book. Would you like me to go through those at this time, Mr. Chairman?
I don't know if we have to. It's evident what you're reducing there, and I just want to say this, and I don't know if the rest of the committee wants to chime in, but of your whatever it is, $12.2 million in cuts, Commissioner, 10.4 of them are cuts that you just passed through to other entities.
Mr. Chairman,
at least according to the booklet. So I guess my question to you is, you know, what did the Minnesota Alliance of Boys and Girls and the Minnesota Inventors Congress, which I think is dear to Representative Seifert's heart, and the Rural Policy and Development Center, which I believe a former Republican state rep is now the director of, what did they have to do to cause with causing a recession that they're getting totally eliminated? And then we could go on and ask what the Minneapolis Summer Youth Program did, or the St. Paul Youth Program or Youth Build, what any of these folks, the deaf and hard of hearing interpreters, had to do with the budget problem that they're this big of a hit in the budget fix.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me take the issues in order. In the general fund of $8.9 million in reductions, about $6.9 million are to programs that DEED manages, but some of those are grant programs. The biggest one, the Job Skills Partnership, as I have said before, probably my greatest regret that we had to reduce that, that we had a target that we were assigned, that we, and in general, the budget climate is such that we had to reduce our general fund spending. About $2 million from the general fund is in pass-throughs that are managed by other organizations. In asking who do we continue to fund in pass-throughs and who do we recommend not funding, we ask the question, does the grant create jobs? Does the grant increase community vitality? Does it line up with our mission and goals? And these are all good programs. None of them were easy to make the decision not to fund. Center for Rural Policy, I was involved with from its inception, I believe, and was here when it was first funded and when its endowment was created. And it certainly is a good program, but it is not a job creation program or an economic development program directly. It does research that may impact public policy decisions in those areas. The River Bend Entrepreneurship Center is a very good program. However, it is in a limited portion of the state, and we ran out of dollars before we ran out of good ideas, Mr. Chairman. That's, I think, the shortest factor. None of these programs did anything to cause the recession, but the ones that we're not recommending funding are less related to our key goals than those that we are recommending funding. And I would emphasize the number of pass-throughs we're not recommending changing at all. For example, the Minnesota Summer Youth Program has had $7 million in the base. We think that should continue. Advocating Change Together, Rick Cardenas' program, we're not recommending changes. We're recommending very small changes, for example, to some of the deaf and hard of hearing programs. And we tried to relate these pass-through grantees to the agency's mission and fund those that were most critical. One that's difficult is Boys Clubs and Girls Clubs. We had hoped that that would get funded in the general fund and not in the workforce development fund. We believe that the higher priority in the workforce development fund should be programs that go to unemployed workers that need services in our workforce center. But we certainly acknowledge that it's a fine program. 22 locations around the state, they do after school and other programs that are career related, but not necessarily immediately job related. We are not at all critical of the program. It was a matter of relationship to our base budget, to our goals. And
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my comment is related a little bit to this and to the last hearing that we just had an hour ago, where many of these programs that you've just mentioned that are going to be trimmed or cut presented. And I'm continuing to have a frustration in my ability to make any judgment about how good or bad a program is. I'm taking your word for it at this point because I don't have that tool to judge. And so as I sat and listened to the presentations in the Bioscience and Workforce Development meeting an hour or so ago, it struck me that one of the functions that DEED might have, particularly with the flow-through grants and some of the other programs that it supports or has money flowing through to support, is in technical support, putting together a common assessment for all groups that are getting grants, that if we could put that form together and set the expectations that anyone that gets any grant, whether it be flow through or a grant from the state, has a reporting mechanism, that they're reporting the same information, so that we might be able to more easily judge the return on our investment. Sometimes there isn't going to be an easy way to judge when you're talking about the difference between youth and adults. Those are, you know, we may have to judge things in slightly different ways. But in these other programs that are all doing training, workforce training, I think it would be helpful to me and maybe others in the future based on some of the questions I've heard, if there was a way to be able to judge the effectiveness of a program by being able to see a uniform return on investment or some sort of formula that the department could help put together. So that's just a thought that I have, and I don't know if you want to comment on it or you just want to ignore it and move on, that's fine too.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no, of course I won't ignore it. We have some of those measurement criteria in economic development programs because of the business subsidy law. We have some of those measurements in workforce programs depending on where they're funded. For example, all of the youth programs, including Minneapolis and St. Paul, the Minnesota Summer Youth and others, provide us with results, and we'll be happy to pass those along to you. MEDA and Women Venture do an excellent job of providing results. We ask them questions like number of businesses started, jobs created, investment leverage, and some of that we rely on them to communicate to you, but some of it we can also communicate. We struggle a little with measurements for some other programs, like the Inventors Congress, which has perhaps other goals. They serve as a liaison for inventors to other resources. Some of these are harder to measure than other trips on Nornis, but as we go along, we'll continue to provide. We will continue to provide as much information as we have. And I do know the difference.
If I could just follow up. Thank you for that. And I do think that's what I'm looking for. And as I said, I've heard the questions from others. And it, again, just the uniform accounting we heard, was it OIC? Is that the right acronym for one of the groups?
Opportunity Industrialization Center.
And they did a wonderful presentation. They had a very detailed report. They talked about welfare, people that would have been on welfare that aren't, that have been removed. They had data about incarceration. They had data about the amount of money someone made and how much they paid into the tax, you know, our state tax base. It was very helpful, but we didn't have that same type of measure from all the organizations. So again, I get back to, it would be helpful for me, and that's because I don't have the business background that many others could maybe look at something and share that information out, perhaps. I'm not able to. So the uniform reporting mechanism would be helpful to me.
Well, I'm sure that Representative Mahoney is going to inform the whole committee as he delves into those programs, which are, you know, good programs, which some suggestions, because there are cuts in here that, you know, could be harmful to some of them, and, you know, there's some that are being totally eliminated. So you mentioned one program that I believe Representative Slocum actually recognized one of her students last year and was very proud of that program and thought that it really did work. So, you know, Representative McElroy's suggestions from, you know, your staff too, as to, I guess every program members, what I'm trying to say is every program is going to have to prove its worth because of the cuts that we're looking at right now. Representative Mahoney to that point, and then Representative Atkins and Clark. And we have a whole list.
Chairman,
was that to your point, to this point?
This is directly to the chair of the Finance Committee. To this point, any recommendations coming out of the policy committee that I happen to chair will deal just with whether it's good program, bad program, has measurements. It will not, for your own personal satisfaction, it will not deal with any finance issues.
I'm not worried about that. I just want you to tell me which ones I got to cut so I can blame it on you when they come by. Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, why do you think he just said what he did? So you can blame it on you. Mr. Chair, Commissioner, you are one of my favorite witnesses, by the way. I don't mind. It doesn't bother me to ask you a really hard question or challenge you a little, because you're one of the sharper guys that we ever get before this committee, and I appreciate you coming. Here's the...
Commissioner.
But here comes. Here it comes. Are you ready? The Boys and Girls Club, $2 million, you're going to eliminate them entirely. You just described it, and I wrote it down. You said it's they do career and job-related stuff, but not necessarily with immediate impact. Well, you just described K-12 education there with that same line. How do we justify that would be the question. The second question would be, the governor talks about we're all going to share the pain. I'm looking at a couple $1 million for kids, boys and girls clubs. If I'm somebody that makes $250,000 a year, how am I sharing the pain to the same degree? Or am I sharing the pain to the same degree? Or haven't we figured that out yet?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vaskin, the governor has been personally a big supporter of Boys Clubs and Girls Clubs. He has volunteered on many occasions to speak at their events, to help with fundraisers, to do a variety of things. And anyone, regardless of how much they make, can donate to Boys Clubs and Girls Clubs. The majority of their support comes from Fundraising United Way and other non-governmental sources. This is I don't know what percentage of their budget this is, but it's not the majority. Where we made the decision to recommend not continuing this funding was a matter of priorities within the Workforce Development Fund, that we have a great many people who need services on an immediate basis. On a long-term basis, you're right about K-12 education. It's important to, you know, 5 to 20 years from now, depending on the age of the child, or 5 to 18 years from now, depending on the age of the child. I would love to have sufficient funds to make the investment in Boys Clubs and Girls Clubs. We had fewer dollars than we had good ideas. Mr. Chairman, if I can go on.
We've got Representative Clark, Haas, and Downey.
The only point I'd like to follow up on, and I don't need a response to this from the commissioner, but I the only thing you said about folks making $250,000, if I happen to be one of those, is if I want to, I can make a donation to the Boys and Girls Club. What I'm still waiting to hear is how we're all sharing the pain. And if I happen to be one of those people that is making that much money, am I feeling that pain the same way that some kid that's a member of the Boys and Girls Club is? I don't buy that yet, Commissioner, and I'm hoping that explanation is coming. I'm not talking as a Democrat or as a Republican. I'm talking just as Minnesotan. We're all going to pitch in. We're going to solve this together, right? Well, show me. Then we'll talk about whether or not the budget deserves support or not. I'm hoping the Democrats, by the way, when we step up and propose budgets, that there will be that shared across-the-board expectation that we'll all pitch in. And I don't say that as a Democrat or a Republican, just as a Minnesotan, that we'll all do our part. Now I'll get off my soapbox. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me.
Well, this is building a little bit on what Representative Norton was asking about the cost-benefit numbers and analysis. I know, for example, that the Youth Build program has actually done a cost-benefit analysis. I don't know if many of the programs in your department have done it quite the way they have, but they've actually done it and compared what happens when you invest in a kid as compared to when you don't invest in them and where they go to prison or they, you know, get in trouble in some ways. And I don't know. That is the kind of standard analysis that we should have for so many things. And I'm just wondering if you can tell us if any of the other programs that are cut in these past two grants have that kind of analysis. I think some of them do, but I'm wondering if you could just tell us which ones.
Representative Clark, I think I'll ask Bonnie Elsie from our Workforce Development Division to come up and help me. But I know, and the example was given, the OICs have excellent measures. MEDA, the Metropolitan Economic Development Agency, does a very good job of measuring. Women Ventures do. We have them for our program. We have measurements on Workforce Investment Act that need to meet Federal Department of Labor grants. All of the federal programs have fairly tight measurements. We get those in some cases from grantees, but we ask them to communicate with you as to what their results are in the case, for example, of Youth Build. You'll notice in the case of Youth Build that we took out of a total appropriation of $2.15 million, we're suggesting we've budgeted in the governor's budget a cut of $150,000. We agree that it is a very high return on investment program and one that we think is very effective.
Yeah. Ms. Elsie, do you have anything to add?
Representative Sabina, I just wanted to add that...
You need to take your name for the record.
Okay, I'm sorry. Bonnie Elsie, Director of Workforce Development. And members of the committee, all of the programs that we have as passed through have their... Twin Cities Rise does a very good job of showing its return on investments, like track resources. They all give us information on what their return on investment is as far as pass-through dollars. So It isn't a matter of judging, in my view, and looking at these programs, which one is doing their job and which one is not. They're all, in my view, doing their job. I think right now with the recession, we're trying to look at which one can help the most volume of people at this given time. This is a different time than normal, and that's kind of what we looked at when we were putting our budget together. Regardless what we cut, somebody will be hurt.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking of, this is, you know, this page has so little information. I mean, it's one page, and it's talking about, it's like a half of a page, and it provides none of that information. And I think in order for the committee, some of us may be more familiar with some of these programs than others, I think that kind of information should be made available to us, not just relying on the people who are coming to lobby for the program to come and tell us. It seems like it should be a matter of public record that's available to all the committee members. And so, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd ask for that, for all the things items that cut, if we could get those cost-benefit analyses presented to us. It doesn't seem like it would be that hard. I know there's some executive summaries that might be available. That would be one thing. The other thing is, maybe Ms. Elsie can tell me, but can you tell me again what the average cost per worker is of the workforce development fund? What does the employer pay per worker on the current rate?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, the principal program in the Workforce Development Fund is the Dislocated Workers Program.
That's what I'm referring to.
And it has two components, a project component and then a small employer component. And I think Ms. Elsie may have those numbers off the top of her head.
Well, are you talking about what does the tax bring in?
What is the cost of the employer?
Allocation per worker.
Oh, what is the cost per worker? It's so different depending upon the program.
Representative Clark, are you asking the payroll tax of 0.01% is up to 20 some thousand of payroll?
$26.
What does it cost per employee?
$26.
Is that what you wanted?
It's going to be $26 per person.
Right.
Is that right? I just want to get that on the record.
That's what the tax is for a
Workforce Development Fund, whatever
right.
You want to call it.
Yes. Well, that's the maximum tax. If somebody makes $26,000, the average is a little less than that because of employees who make less than that. If a person has more than one job, they would pay a 0.1% in each of their jobs up to $26,000. But the maximum per employer is $26 per employee. Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I thought you were asking what does the program spend on a participant in the dislocated workers
program. I
knew what she was asking.
The reason I'm asking...
I asked you guys for stuff and you didn't understand what I was asking for either.
Thank you for your help on that. The reason I'm asking, though, is because it's a small dollar figure that we ask an employer to pay for a program that does so much in terms of retraining workers. And I just think it's usually a surprise to know how small that number is, and when we've asked to increase that, there's always so much resistance. It's such a small number that lets us all share the pain. $26 per person that an employer pays to try to get, you know, someone who's dislocated the opportunity to get some retraining is pretty small. I just wanted to get that on the record.
Okay, Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. To Representative Atkins' point on the Boys and Girls Club, I think one of the mistakes that we make
Hold on a second. Representative Atkins noted he has to go so he can get above that $250,000. He's got a case he's got to work on. So.
Well, as long as he... if you can get 15% of your hourly wage when you're gone back in, I would appreciate that. I think sometimes we focus too solidly on the benefit to the boys and girls involved in the Boys and Girls Club. I think one of the places that it relates to is a single parent that has to go out to work and has a couple children and said, well, what do we do now? We can't afford to have daycare, and if we cheat, we put them over someplace where they're not going to get any benefits. So the Boys and Girls Club steps in, and they step in the morning, and they step in the evening. They may step in with meals. They step in with tutors, and allows parents and working people to get off welfare, to have a job. It really is hard to go from non-working to a job that's going to be paying enough to take care of daycare and all the other needs of that child. So we are helping the children, certainly. We're helping the whole family, and we're helping the parents that want to work be able to work. And I think we really do need, just because there's multiple objectives being hit, does not mean that the finite mission of jobs and economy and people working is not in that multiple collection of attributes of the club, because it is there.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to compliment the department. I think the fact that we're even having this discussion shows that trying to align these decisions and priorities to the strategic objectives and having a framework for evaluating them is really helpful and positive for us. So I guess I'd echo the request previously for a little more of that information available to us. One real tactical question. The base budget that we're looking at and the reduction, is that off of the previous biennium's actuals, or is that off of what the projected upcoming biennium would have reflected?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, you asked a profound question that's not easy to answer. It is off what is called the base budget, which is the budget prior to one-time money in the previous biennium. Indeed, often is appropriated one-time money for programs like the Minnesota Investment Fund or the 21st Century Mineral Fund or bond funds of various sorts, or those are the largest share of one-time money. We separate those out from the base, and in the 08-09 biennium, we had general fund base of about $87 billion. We were asked to take a 10% reduction in that, which we are recommending, and that results in a governor's budget recommendation from the general fund for 10-11 of $77 million.
Mr. Chairman, that base would have been pre-unallotment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, that's correct.
Yeah, and one final question, if I could. I'm familiar with
to that point, how much were you unallotted? And I don't think the unallotment had anything to do with your base, but were you unallotted?
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, you were? That's great. You took some money that I had in the program. I forgot about that. Okay. $1 million or $500,000.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. One program that I'm familiar with, Twin Cities Rise, if I am correct, is actually only compensated upon success, and success is defined as an extremely at-risk individual being employed in a job for a year with health care benefits. And so it seems that there's like a straight up 100% ROI. We don't actually pay that program until they've actually delivered the employed person. And I'm curious whether or not any of these other programs have a similar pay for performance, kind of 100% return associated with them or not, or if that's maybe unique in the portfolio of programs here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, it is unique in our programs. They are the only one that are compensated that way.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, as a result of that, they also have a fairly high cost for participants. And so their pay on results model is a result of the fact that they spend a great deal on each participant. They have some who don't finish. It's an outstanding program. It's why we continue to recommend a significant appropriation for them. But there is some trade-off to the fact that they get paid only for results. Mr. Chairman, if I could go on.
I think we got Representative Obermuller, and then you can go on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I'm not sure where this fits in, so maybe you're going to get to it already, but I've got a question regarding the $6 million for the Universal Job Seekers there. And my understanding is that money is going to be used to hire reemployment specialists who can help people use this in a room, kind of understand how to make the job search. And I applaud that effort. I think that's something we're going to need a lot more. But two questions, I guess, on that point is we've got some 35, I think, or maybe 36 members of DEED staff that are doing business services field operations, and I'm wondering if any consideration was given to using that those people to do the jobs of the new people you're going to hire I don't know how many more people that $6 million is getting us in those rooms, but if that money could have, if those workers could have spent a day in the office and fixed that. And the other thing is, well, let me ask that first, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Overmuir, the people that you're describing are called business service specialists. They're paid for from federal dollars, an act called the Job Seeker Services or Wagner Advisor Act. We have moved them into the workforce centers, in most cases, one day a week. We also believe they play a critical role being, or calling on businesses to increase use of MinnesotaWorks.net, to make referrals in many cases either to our programs like Veteran Services or Vocational Rehabilitation or State Services for the Blind, and to programs of other state agencies like customized training at the Minnesota colleges and universities, Extension or a variety of others. They make about, I think we can give you a number, something over 4,000 business visits a year. And they are, we think their return on investment is significant. We're recommending that we use $3 million each year from the Workforce Development Fund to fund approximately 40 positions in the workforce centers to provide the assistance that you described to job seekers in making full use of our programs, in getting off unemployment insurance faster, in qualifying as early in their unemployment as possible for any program they may qualify for, such as dislocated workers. When Ms. Elsie comes, we'll be up in a few minutes and we can talk more about that program, but we've certainly had the discussion with a variety of our partners as to whether the business service specialist program should be moved entirely back into the workforce, and we don't think that's the right strategy. We think using them on the busiest days, some of the time in the workforce centers, is a good idea, but we believe that we need to serve both the employment side of the equation and the job seeker side of the equation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick follow-up.
Representative, you can have a follow-up, and then I'm going to follow up.
All right. Thank you.
MAPA.
This goes to Representative Clark's question earlier. I was under the impression that the 0.1% tax that we're using now was not the limit of your authority. Don't you have the authority now to put in it? I think it goes up to 0.12 or some such number. And was there any consideration at all given to doing that as opposed to taking the $6 million out of the Workforce Development Fund, which could have been used for dislocated worker benefits, that sort of thing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Overmiller.
Hold on a second. Did you come to my office and I coach you on these questions? I can't remember this.
Not that I'm aware of, Mr. Chairman.
Smart on his own. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Overmiller, we did consider whether it was wise to raise the tax at this time. Our greatest concern is that none of the states we compete with have a tax like this, and that their total unemployment tax is, in most cases, fairly dramatically lower than Minnesota's. We're working on an up-to-date exhibit that will show you what the unemployment tax is in surrounding states, and we clearly benefit from it, but we think there is some limit as to how high that tax can be. It is zero in Iowa, Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, and a 20% increase to us had some risk involved, but we understand it certainly also would have brought some benefit.
Commissioner, I was around, and so was Representative Clark and Representative Murphy, and I think they're the only ones at this table that were around when this tax was passed initially, and it was a tax for displaced workers. And it wasn't a tax for running your bureaucracy. And frankly, Representative Overmuller, you went off on a good line of questions because there's absolutely nothing that stops this committee from saying that you're going to keep those people in that with some federal money in the workforce centers 3 days a week or 4 days a week. I've looked at your plan, and I think you have a plan. I don't know. Ms. Newman, do you have a book I asked you to look at the other day? But anyway, your plan to the federal government seems to be on a lot of this federal money geared towards the business instead of the displaced workers, unemployed workers. And right now we're in a situation that I don't think taking $6 million biannually out of that fund that was created in statute for displaced workers to backfill for you. I've been trying for 2 years for you new members to put a person in every workforce center in the state and was threatened with a veto both years. Representative Murphy held on to it when they split up in conference committee, the workforce part of this budget. She tried to hold on it to the end and we just kept getting threatened and threatened. And now you come forward finally agreeing with me, but you want to take the money from that fund. And Commissioner, I think Karen, Representative Clark, made the point very well. The tax right now, the maximum tax on a worker is $26. What would it have gone to if it went from 0.101 to 0.012?
$31.20, Mr. Chairman.
Well, see, and that's annually, $5. And, you know, you had the authority to do that in law, and you didn't do it, and now, and it would have raised, just by coincidence, I think a little over $6 million annually, not biannually. So this is going to be one very difficult request for me, at least as the chair, and I hope for most of the members in both sides of the aisle, that this money would be taken. Miss Elsie, I believe that you have the right under the stipulations on that federal money that you get to put those people to help unemployed workers. There's a number of them, I think, in this audience that just walked in from the, maybe the IBEW.
Nope, that's an interpreter.
Oh, geez, don't shoot me, I'm sorry. Anyway, that are on the bench, a lot of them. And they need help in those workforce centers. And they need a live person to talk to. A lot of these guys here are like me. They're not very good with a computer. Help me out here. That means a lot of them aren't. They need a real person to help them. So I am a little disappointed with this $6 million request. And Representative O'Meara hit the nose on the head. There's some federal monies that can be used. If we got to put it in law, we're going to put it in law that's where it's going to be used.
Representative Zivina.
Ms. Elson.
I would just like to respond to that. We are very much responding to the economy right now. I have taken those business services representatives and put them one day a week in the workforce center. The rest of the time, I'm asking them to visit businesses that are laying off workers. And I'm asking them to visit businesses that are laying off workers because what we need to know is when they do start hiring again, are they going to hire people with the same skills, or are they going to look for a new set of skills? And what are those set of skills they're going to be looking for if they're not going to hire the same kind of people? It's absolutely imperative that our career counselors in our workforce centers understand what the jobs of the future are so they can train for the right thing. We have an opportunity right now to train people because we've got extended unemployment. These 40 staff that we are proposing to put in the workforce centers are not just to help people as far as in the resource rooms. They are to do a detailed analysis of the unemployment insurance claims and look at the significant characteristics of the people and demographics of the people in the claims load so that they can go through and they can invite in everybody who doesn't have a high school education in one group. And they can say to them, adult basic ed is here. This is the time to get some retraining. You know, get your GED. Let's get some, if they're not English speaking.
Elsie, let me interrupt you. And the retraining that the money that they use is being taken to pay for the staff.
No, ABE does that kind of training.
Well, you have pots of money that we can, that we don't know what the...
The regular dislocated worker program, I just think this is very important for the record, pays a large percentage of its budget for staff. 34% of the dislocated worker allocation goes for training, actual books, tuition. 10% is for administration at the local level. 9% is for administration. 10% is for supportive service, and the rest is for staff. Staff, you have to pay for staff to do career guidance, to do job-seeking skills workshops. One way or the other, the workforce centers are made up of people in order to help people. It's not just sending them off to...
And the problem is there was nobody left from the state, hardly, at least in my workforce center in Virginia, there wasn't a state employee left in it.
The one that's starting is it from Wednesday?
All I wanted was 1-2 years ago.
Oh.
And Mr. Chairman,
and the Wagner-Peisner money can be used for that. I think that's what Representative Oldmuir is asking about.
But
so maybe you should go back and sharpen your pencil on this. And I don't understand why they would have to be your folks 4 days a week talking to the business person about what he might need in the future when they're, and 1 day a week helping the, there's a lot more unemployed workers right now than there are business owners to ask those questions.
Well, we're also trying, Representative Rivina, to alleviate layoffs. I mean, layoff aversion is a very important part of what we do. What are your issues? What is it that you need right now? The majority of the people that the business service specialists call on are small employers. It's not the big employers who have an HR department. They become an HR department for small employers. And, you know, I can give you the kinds of results that we have received from businesses as far as what businesses are saying about what they do for them.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Elsie, and Commissioner McElroy, just quick math here. You stated earlier there's 4,000 contacts, these 35 people are doing. I'm coming up with about 130 to 135 contacts per employee. That's about one contact, a day for 26 weeks?
No, there's about 10 a week.
So there's 10 a week, that's two a day.
They're not just, they're writing position descriptions for employers, they're helping them, they help set up apprenticeship programs, they're not just...
Can they write a resume for an unemployed worker?
Can they, yes.
One day a week. And they're going to
write
position descriptions for the employer 4 days a week.
And they write, they help businesses with job orders and get them into Minnesota's job bank. We need those jobs.
And that is the other argument. You need to know where the jobs are to know where to refer people who are looking for work.
Commissioner, how many jobs did we lose in December?
In December, 11,000, Mr. Chairman.
How many do you have a January count yet?
No, Mr. Chairman, I do not.
How many we use in November?
23,000, Mr. Chairman.
How many do we lose in October?
I don't remember, Mr. Chairman.
The point being, there's a lot of people being laid off that need help in those workforce centers because a lot of them are in a predicament they haven't been in years, and a lot of them are elderly. And I'm old, you know, myself. And some of these guys I see that just came in the door are not far behind me. One's got more gray hair, but I think he's younger than I am. But any event, you know, they need a real live person to help them. I've got 70-year-old people getting that spent their entire mine retirement opening up new businesses that are calling Sue to help because they don't know how to run that computer, and they go in and nobody's there to help them. And as soon as they press the wrong thing, they won't let them back on the computer system to get their unemployment insurance, and that's not Sue's job to be doing that.
Yes.
Representative Mahoney.
I did my math again. Now, a little over 4,000 employers. You know, I'm only using 30 employees. It comes to 130 contacts per year per employee, and there's 250 work days in a year. Now, if somebody's doing two a day, I don't quite get how you get 10 a week. I really don't. I mean, I just wanted to make Sister Vincent proud. She was my math teacher in grade school. You'll have to do a better job of figuring those numbers for me.
Representative Gavina and Representative, I would like to say that they don't just, those are unique employers. When they get involved with a business, they aren't talking to that business just once, and then they, you know, so they could be talking to that particular business many times in a week, or could spend an entire week with a business, depending upon what they're working on.
Okay, Commissioner, I'm
sorry. Mr. Chairman,
excuse me, Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, just a clarification on Commissioner McElroy, you talked about the layoffs back in December and I guess November. And we have seasonal layoffs too. What do you know what a typical layoff in those months would be if the economy was anywhere close to normal? Or I know it may be hard to come up with that, but I'm just wondering how.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norris, I do not. I will tell you, the one thing I'm concerned about is the perception that the media gives that no one is getting a job or that there aren't any jobs in the economy, and that's not accurate. We keep track through the unemployment insurance wage detail of the number of people who are in new employment. And the most recent data I have on the state basis is from September. And in the third quarter, 465,000 Minnesotans started new jobs. And so there are people getting jobs. We get a national number, but the most recent number is in November. It's called the JOLTS data, Job Opening and Labor Turnover Study data. And 3.8 million new jobs, 3.8 million people started new employment in November. And so even though we're losing jobs, there is still some activity and still work worth helping people look for work. That's the reason that I believe in the business service specialist program, in that it helps us know where the jobs are. Ms. Elsie's right, that it helps us know about skills. The biggest thing I am enthused about is the number of job openings that we get into MinnesotaWorks.net. But, Mr. Chairman, if I could go on to the next item on this slide. It's a proposal for funding for the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota for $200,000 for the biennium to continue with the implementation of their 2025 roadmap for the bioscience industry broadly defined. It's explained on page 13 of the budget.
Representative Mahoney, do you have a question?
No, I'll let him finish.
Go ahead. Excuse me. Go ahead.
The next proposal is being referred to as Green Job Z, but we're certainly not hung up on that name. I suspect it will have different name in legislation. This was Senator Alan Anderson's idea. It is to create a tax-free zone for green employers. It uses a definition that's found on page 14, and it would apply to companies that create renewable energy, represent manufacturing equipment or services used in renewable energy, create a product or service that lessens energy use or emissions. So it is production of green equipment, green fuels, conservation equipment. The
Commissioner, will that be a grant program?
Mr. Chairman, it will not be. It is a tax-free zone.
So the revenues we're seeing up there are?
Tax costs, you know, there are revenue note costs, so it's reduced tax revenue. And again, Mr. Chairman, this would appear on the in the tax committee's spreadsheet, but because it's an economic development program, we included it in our budget. It's actually in a bill being carried by the Department of Revenue.
And will be overseen by your department, all the intricacies like you oversee the Job Z, current Job Z program?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And so is there a staff person or another couple of staff people for that?
I don't think we have a staff person in the Green Z budget. Mr. Chairman, we do not. And we currently administer that within the Job Z and Business Finance Unit. And we're hoping to do that without adding additional staff.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Commissioner. Can you give me a little bit of the rationale around the point on the Green Z program of having it across the state versus focused on Greater Minnesota as we saw with Job Z? In local government, we weren't a fan of Job Z. We tended to see the ships on the deck just move around versus adding more chairs. But if we're going to go down this road, it at least was a tool Greater Minnesota had, especially regional centers for economic development, and I'm not quite sure I see the advantage in this program.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, one key difference here is that this is only available to new businesses, not to relocations from elsewhere in the state or to expansion. So it applies to businesses that are brand new or are moving here from out of state. The reason that it's offered on a statewide basis is we believe the opportunities are statewide, both the source of feedstocks, whether those are waste paper or sewage treatment sludge or garbage, or corn stalks, wheat straw, et cetera, are available everywhere in the state. And the markets for the outcome put is everywhere in the state. And so in Senator Anderson's proposal would be that it would not be tied to predetermined acres as we did with the first Job Z program, but that we would create a zone where a business was brought into existence or a new business started. Be happy to go through the results of Job Z. There was some, particularly prior to the changes made in the 2008 session, some relocation of deck chairs, as you put it. We also got some pretty big new ships like Suzlon and Pipestone and Daktronics in Redwood Falls and Total Card in Laverne and IraCore in Hibbing and Greenbush Manufacturing in Greenbush, Central Boiler in Greenbush. We had some great successes, but there were some relatively small companies moving 5 miles that we aren't likely to approve in the future. But that's the rationale behind having it as a statewide program.
Go ahead. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
Commissioner McElroy, 2 years ago, through the generosity of finance chair, we put $400,000 into an Office of Commercialization and Technology Transfer, and it's been zeroed out in this particular budget. But a bit of searching found out that authorization of $400,000, and my understanding is only $200,000 was spent in that particular office. I'm just wondering what happened to the other $200,000. And frankly, I want you to explain to me why, when we authorize a dollar figure, you think it is so smart of you to say that you don't really believe this is the dollar figure we should spend.
Oh, Mr. Chairman,
Commissioner,
Berkshire Mahoney, we are looking forward to spending every penny.
You were supposed to spend it in this particular biennium, not in the next biennium.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, some of it, a fair amount of it, will get spent in this biennium. $200,000 is being spent on kind of on salaries and things we directly control, and $200,000 in grants to companies to advance their SBIR applications, assistance to companies in SBIR applications. Not all of that will get out in this biennium, but some will.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, that was not a fund for SBIR figure, matching grants of any sort. That was a $400,000 appropriation to hire people to go out and help small businesses, particularly med tech businesses, come into the state, work with the U.S. military and the DOD to bring these grants back to this particular state. We did not authorize that money to teach people one thing or another. It was to hire staff to go out and particularly compete, as we have not done in the past, with other states to bring that federal money in. And frankly, Mr. Commissioner, having told that I am not supposed to talk to someone in your department unless there is your political person there with them or on the phone with them, does not particularly endear your department to this particular legislator.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, what you just said is news to me. I wasn't aware of that, and I will deal with that. You may recall that we posted for a position, or perhaps two, for this work. But because it was one-time money, in part, we had grave difficulty in getting qualified people to respond to our RFP, and we weren't able to hire. We also tried to contract for people, and we're not able to find the types of people, as I think you're aware. That's when we have not succeeded in spending all the money. We believe that assisting companies that are applying is an excellent use of the appropriation. It's authorized under the language of the appropriation. In terms of why it wasn't recommended in the governor's budget, as I have said several times, we ran out of dollars before we ran out of really excellent ideas, one of which I believe is that program. And if dollars become available as part of the federal stimulus, I'm delighted to spend them in that area. We did succeed, and I think you are aware of the number, that we have $27 million in SBIR grants came into Minnesota in calendar 2008. We think that's outstanding performance. We want to do better, and we appreciate your support for the program.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
I think if you're spending $200,000 and getting $27 million back, my elementary school math teacher would be very disappointed in this particular state.
Commissioner, you want to go on? Let's see. I believe we've done green jobs, so we'll go to page 15 in the budget book to Section 125 grant reduction.
All right. Mr. Chairman, the item involving Section 125 grants requires a little background. This item was came from the Committee on Health and Human Services at the very end of the conference committee last year. It was an idea to assist small businesses in applying for what are described as IRS Section 125 programs, sometimes called cafeteria plans or health reimbursement plans. The money was appropriated from the Healthcare Access Fund to provide grants of, I believe, $350 to employers to assist them in paying their setup costs. first grants are scheduled to be made later this year. The governor's recommending we reduce that amount from $800,000, or from $1 million to $200,000, or a reduction of $800,000. It's kind of jointly administered, not kind of, rather, it is jointly administered in Commerce and in Deed, but it's been buried in Deed's budget. The last item on this slide is the item that Representative Obermueller asked about.
We've had some good discussions on that, and I don't know if we need to get into the Universal Job Seeker Workforce Center, because we basically discussed it probably in depth. Commissioner and members, I'm a little disappointed with the budget proposals and the deed. As I mentioned, a lot of the reductions are just pass-through reductions to good organizations. But beyond that, the imagination or the innovative ideas for creating jobs, I just don't think are there in this budget proposal. You know, I heard the governor this morning at Duluth Station. It was nice. He sat down next to me, Commissioner. It was like old times on the House floor, you know. Invited me over to the mansion even for a night of pool. And
a beer, I understand.
And some, yes. Well, I made sure that the troopers there were going to pick us up and bring us back home, because I didn't want them calling them after I walked out the door. So, you know, we've got that straight anyway. So, but, you know, he talked about a few of these programs. But then he talked about doing things from the old days and thinking, you know, about new ideas. These new ideas don't seem to me to be very creative. You know, I think of a program when I first came here that probably Representative Clark, I think, had a lot to do with, and that was MEED, the Minnesota Emergency Employment Department, which my good friend and former president of my steelworkers local that I belong to, Joseph Marzaran. And that was a very successful program that I believe is right now being copied in North Carolina, and I think we heard also in New Jersey, but I'm not sure about that. But I did see the news article on the North Carolina, and they mentioned the MEED program. It was a very successful program. What's wrong with a program like that right now that get people back to work? You know, or the governor a few months back said he wasn't going to accept any of that federal stimulus package, but this morning he announced to folks at Duluth Days that he was. A lot of that's going to require some state matching. Where is that state match money going to come from?
Mr. Chairman,
those are jobs, Commissioner.
Let me answer the second question first. We have not been able to find any of the stimulus money so far that requires a match, with the exception of the administrative match for the U.S. Department of Commerce EDA money. And we'll have to find, we'll make a recommendation if that is part of the final bill. The other money that was likely to come to deed is principally from the U.S. Department of Labor, and we've verified, and that would be Workforce Investment Act and Wagner-Peiser money, and is not, we're told, will not have an increased match. In terms of MEED, if we were...
And to that point, Commissioner, why can't some of that money be used instead of our state workforce development money to fund and put those people under Wagner-Peiser money? And I noticed there was an increase in the federal dollars projected in these books way in the back pages that we're not going to discuss here today, nor do we usually ever discuss, but we should. And that there's an increase there, and why can't some of that money then be used for putting these people in the workforce center?
Mr. Chairman, that's very likely that it can be.
If the bill comes out here, Commissioner, it's very likely that it will be.
That's correct. And we would look forward to that, and it's possible that when the governor does an amended budget after March the 4th, that you'll see some changes along those lines. At the time this budget was prepared, we weren't, that there was no indication there would be a stimulus package. It was that these budgets were proposed or prepared in late December and early January, prior to the time we knew a stimulus package was likely. If I could get back to MEED, you asked what was wrong with the program. And the answer is probably nothing, but there are ways to make it better. It was a very expensive program. I believe it was an $80 million program.
It was more than that. I think it was about 100.
Recall what the...
I think it was 100, help me out, staff. 120? Mm-hmm. 120, 130 million over, it spanned about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. If we, you know, we're blessed with those kinds of resources, we would suggest that it have,
Rudy Purpose didn't have those kind of resources then either. It was almost similar to today's situation. Not quite as bad, but almost. Remember, a little history lesson for everybody here at the table, but those two at the end. We went special session. The legislature was still in special session when the regular session in January convened. And Governor Quay was forced to raise a surcharge on income tax, which, geez, I think somebody proposed that here at the table, and the sales tax increased. And then Purpose came in, and the economy was in shambles. But they had also raised some revenue along with the cuts that they did. And they had some money available, and we don't have that option today. We need to put people to work, Commissioner. We can't wait till 2012 to have an angel program or the other one where we're going to give AIG or whoever some $30 million worth of money and hope that it creates jobs. I don't think we can afford to wait that long.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to be very clear, those programs begin immediately. The tax credits mature in 3 years.
If there is tax credits approved by the legislature.
If there are tax credits approved by the legislature. The governor's proposal, which we believe is created and has worked in 11 other states, would have immediate results, but the tax credits have a 3-year holding period. In terms of need, we've been discussing this with Workforce Center leadership that were involved in need when it was done more than 25 years ago. And we would think that having a job training component would be important. There was a provision that employers had to repay wages if the jobs didn't continue, but it was done in such a way it was almost impossible for them to repay it or collect. There may be other refinements that could be made to the program. We don't see having the dollars to do a need-style program in 2009.
Is there anything that prohibits us from using some of that money that comes in from the federal government, whether it's for, you know, adult services or, you get your workforce development, adult services, you've got business services. Is there anything that prohibits us from using that other than amending our plan to the federal government?
Mr. Chairman, we'll know better when we see the final language.
I mean under current appropriations.
Under the current Workforce Investment Act money is allocated principally to our Workforce Center partners to pay for their program.
I'm speaking the federal dollars.
That is the federal dollars. Federal. The Federal Workforce Investment Act, 55% of those dollars go, 85%. Of those dollars go to the workforce service areas right off the top, and they don't fund state programs. And so, no, they would not be available for needed. If there's one-time dollars available from a stimulus package in Workforce Investment Act, that's a possible use for them, although we expect there to be some restrictions in the federal act. We don't know what they'll be yet.
Is there anything in Wagner-Pfizer that would let us do that?
No, Mr. Chair. Wagner-Pfizer is required to be used for salaries and benefits for what are described in the law as merit employees. Now, those merit employees can be used for various things, including...
Well, salaries and benefits would be a job for a merit employee, right?
I don't believe that the Wagner-Pfizer Act works for me, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we'll take a deeper look at that. But in any event, Representative Anderson, weigh in on this. Come on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you mind if a Representative Norris, I guess, had his hand up earlier? So we want to give you the last blow here, so go ahead.
We may have the same question. Since we're discussing the budget from the governor's office, it seems like time is really flying by. Can you give us any indication of when we will begin to form our own budget in this committee? And do you have a timeline at all when that might... It seems like deadlines are close and fast and furious, and I don't want to be here next January trying to figure this out.
Well, Representative Nornis, I don't have a target, and I don't think I'm going to get a target for quite a while. And we haven't even gotten all the departments in front of us to go over the governor's budget proposal. I've been very open, and some people have talked to me about my openness, about saying in several committees that we're not going to get out of here without raising revenue. And I'm not saying that we're not going to get out of here without making severe cuts to government. I know there's got to be a mix of both. Frankly, if we don't get a mix of both, you might be here for me, and you might be buying me a Christmas present. So, and I'll get you one, too. We'll exchange. We'll draw names out of the hat. We don't have to buy that many. But I don't have a target yet. I don't know when I'm going to get it. You know my feelings. I've talked about income tax surcharges, which I think is a fair way to raise some revenue. If you guys got any other ideas how to do it, that's fine. But we're not the committee that's going to determine that, I guess. But what does disappoint me, there's really nothing in here that is for job creation. And this is our job creation agency, number one. And number two, I'm really kind of disturbed when I look at this, when I see, as an example, if you go back to page 11, we talk about some of those cuts that are going to be here to others, the Job Skill Partnership Program. That's taken a big hit, $4.5 million almost. That money goes to grants to probably your community college and my community college and, MCTC and other places that do customized training for businesses that throw in, if I'm not mistaken, Commissioner, some money into the pot too here. And so at a time when we've got massive layoffs in this state and we need to be retraining workers and maybe some of our businesses that still want workers trained, we're cutting $5 million out of that program.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
We should balance that with the fact that we got a $5 million grant from the U.S. Department of Labor called WIRED, Workforce Investment for Regional Economic Development, which goes to the same community college largely. We have gotten, I believe, $9 million in community-based job training money, principally from MINSCU institutions in the last few months, including an announcement last week of grants to Pine Technical College and South Central College. So there are some additional resources. Most of those don't come through FEED, they come through MINSCU, but there are more dollars in the system because of federal grants, even though, unfortunately, we're having to cut jobs in this partnership.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to...
I'm sorry if I acted a little wired here today, but...
I just wanted to point out that there has to be a balance. You need to create the jobs, and you need to also train the employees. So, you need to do both, and hopefully that's what we can... And I have a vacation planned for next October, so just keep that...
Cancel it. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope that if we are here at Christmas that you don't draw my name, because I'm not sure... Lump of coal. So, but Mr. Chair, as you know, I've had the opportunity to serve with you on a couple of committees this year, which is a first for me, and heard you today in tax committee lambast the proposal in that committee as far as job creation, and here again today in this committee saying, we're not creating jobs. But myself, like Representative Norris, I am concerned as far as when we as a House body are going to get to the task of actually developing a budget. Are we going to be looking at March 4th as our deadline? Are we going to wait until the governor has a second version of his budget proposal before we start our work? Or, I guess I am very anxious to see what this timeline is going to be and what kind of conversations you've had with the speakers to try and speed up the process as far as, setting the targets and things of that nature, because I think the sooner that we start, we can maybe avoid a Christmas celebration together. And though it would be a treat to see you at Christmas, I'd rather spend it with my family, if you don't mind.
I could fit in your stocking, too.
You are Elsa, yes.
What an ugly gift. Anyway... I haven't talked to leadership about that. What I've talked to leadership about is the fact that we're going to go out now with the governor's budget proposals, and we're going to listen to the people who are going to tell us, maybe that's, Mr. Vina, you're wacky. You're not, I don't need to pay another surcharge on my income tax. Maybe we're going to listen to people tell us, why don't you raise this tax or that tax? Maybe we're going to listen to people tell us, you shouldn't raise any taxes at all. You should cut them. I didn't say this morning that... I asked Commissioner Hynes this morning where there was proof that tax cuts create jobs, because this list here under the last four governors does not show that fact at all. And that's the point I was trying to make this morning. And the point I was trying to make this morning also is that there are tax increases in the governor's budget, because there's over a half a billion dollars of local government aid, county aid, other aids that go to some of the members on this committee, payment in lieu of taxes, etc., that are cut out of that budget that are going to have to be replaced. And Representative Eastland knows they're going to have to be replaced by local taxpayers, or there's going to be some serious cuts to the services that government provides. So I can't tell you when I'm going to get my targets, or when any of us are going to get our targets. I can tell you that we're going to go out and listen and get some input from the people and see what they think of the governor's budget proposal. So, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I think that one of the most serious and responsible things that we can do is go over the budget recommendations and what we've spent in the past, and be able to have the opportunity to ask the commissioner any questions we have about what's being done. I think that's the most serious foundation for the new budget that we could possibly do, and it's the wisest use of our time. That being said, Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the minutes.
I was just going to have you move them.
As printed.
Okay, Representative Murphy moves the minutes of last Thursday's meeting. Any additions or corrections? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted, and members, and that's why, Commissioner, and we're going to do this with everyone, MNC, the university, and you're right, Representative Murphy, go back and see where all the money that we have appropriated, that's now in the base, that we don't know, you know, what it's being used for, including federal dollars, like the discussion we had on Wagner Pfizer and other dollars here today. We've been told by the governor we got to do more with less and use our money wisely, so that's what we'll try to do. Commissioner, always a pleasure. You do answer all the questions. I got to give you credit for that.
Thank you.
I didn't blame you yet for this, you know, this structural deficit we're in, but we'll save that for another meeting.
Only one other. And I appreciate that. I won't blame you for the weather either.
Meeting adjourned.